This is the Adam Carriker Show.
Position right of the quarterback, out of the shotgun, first and 20. Jailbreak screen in the air. It is tipped. It is intercepted by Carriker at the Missouri 21-yard line.
Live from the heart of Lincoln, America, eight-year NFL vet and All-American defensive lineman Adam Carriker.
Shotgun snap to Everett. He's got the left arm going, and now he's got a whole lot of Adam Carriker who rips it down inside the 25-yard line.
A 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Here is your host, Adam Carriker.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome into hour two of the Adam Carriker Show here on 93.7 The Ticket. If you missed hour one, I went on a U Sports rant. It wasn't really a rant, but we talked some U Sports for a little bit. Jake Turd Heel has said we should do the tomahawk chop. Isn't that exactly what you said?
It went something like that, I think.
I said I love the war chant, and I wouldn't be opposed to doing it at Arrowhead. The people were not crazy about it, but I'm not normal, and what else is new? What else are we talking about? Oh, yeah, and Dominican Sue retired. All right. We got anything real quick before I chat a little bit about that there, Jake, or no?
We did have 2690 says, just as certain as Iowa has bad corn and poor quarterback play, Sue deserved the Heisman.
That is one of my favorite texts we've ever gotten. Can you read that again for the people?
Just as certain as Iowa has bad corn and poor quarterback play, Sue deserved the Heisman.
Dude, that and the one where Andy Jurassic said, like, your national championship would be, what do you say, Minnesota and Texas?
Iowa.
And Iowa. Yeah. Texas versus Iowa made it even better. Those are my two favorite texts we've ever gotten right there. They're both kind of like jabs at people. What's that say about me there, Jake?
You like watching others crumble.
I like to make people squirm. All right. Yeah. What else have we gotten along the question that I posed for the fine folks at home? Should Ndamukong Suh have won the Heisman? What are some of the other responses we've gotten there? And I know it's a loaded question, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, not too much as far as there's just a couple of people that said yes. So everybody in Nebraska is going to continue to argue that. Though, I will remind people, it's not like you finished second. You didn't finish fourth in the voting.
That's a fair point. Okay, because Mark Ingram won it that year. So Mark Ingram, phenomenal college player, phenomenal pro career. Not questioning any of that. In my opinion, though, he's not one of the stronger Heisman winners we've had. If you look at the separation in the voting, it was very close. There's been other years when there's been bigger separation in the final voting for the Heisman from 1-2 and 2-3. Like, the separation from Ingram to Sue is not all that different than a lot of years, the separation from 1-2 in the Heisman voting. Now, it is fair to point out that Glover, right, 1972 Heisman voting, when Johnny Rogers won it, our stud D-tackle, All-American, one of the best to ever do it in the history of college football Hall of Famer, finished third. Mm. Actually finished a slot higher than Sue, and I think he gets forgotten about simply because he played a while ago. So just to point that out as well. All right, Ndamukong Suh, one of the most dominant defensive linemen in recent NFL, and of course, throughout all of college football history, announced his retirement. The 38-year-old, who last played in the NFL in 2022, shared on social media, all right, that he was going to retire. Also, it marked the one-year anniversary from when his father passed away. All right, and he honored his father's final advice to move on to the next chapter of his life. Sue's retirement closes the book on a remarkable 13-year NFL career that saw him play for five teams, here in five Pro Bowl selections, and also a Super Bowl ring as well. Now, he was drafted number two overall by the Detroit Lions that year in the 2010 NFL draft out of Nebraska. Obviously, standout collegiate player, one of the most decorated defensive players in the history of the NCAA, earning such accolades as Associated Press College Football Player of the Year in 2009. His transition to the pro went very, very well. Easy for me to say. All right, he played really well right out the gate for the Lions. He had 10 sacks his rookie season. All right, he was the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year in 2010 as well. Over his 13-year career, he played for the Lions, the Dolphins. He signed that big free agent deal with the Dolphins, okay? Los Angeles Rams. That's where he won the Super Bowl, right? It was with the Rams?
Yeah.
You sounded definitive on that. I'm pretty definitive as well. He won the Super Bowl with the Rams. Then he went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Philadelphia Eagles as well. 600 career tackles, 130 TFLs, 71.5 sacks, 38 passes defended. I remember he had an insane knack for knocking down passes at Nebraska too.
So he did, by the way, he won it with the Bucks. I think they were runner up maybe in that Super Bowl with the Rams.
It was the Bucks, wasn't it? That's right. Because him and Levante David got the ring. Okay, good call on that there, Jake. All right. Sue was also named to the NFL's All-Decade Team for the 2010s. Obviously, one of the premier tackles, defensive tackles in the league for that decade as well. Now, he was known for being incredibly physical, intense, didn't say a whole lot sometimes, but almost like he didn't have to. All right, in the Super Bowl victory in 2020, recorded 10 tackles and 1.5 sacks throughout that postseason as a whole. All right, and let me see here. All right, got my place again. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Sue did mention his dad had a big impact on him, as most fathers do, but I think it was extra special to him. He put out a whole social media message on it, the one-year anniversary as well, and then retiring from the NFL. He does have a podcast now as well. It's based on, you know, No Free Lunch. It's in large part finance-based, how to capitalize on finances and certain things that he's done and he's learned to help to make more money and take advantage of certain things that are available to people out there. So if you ever get a chance, you can check that out as well. So Sue, I think I shared maybe a month or two ago about the story the first time I met Sue. We were getting ready to play Pittsburgh. They had, I think it was my junior, sophomore year. I can't remember for sure. They had an all Big East left tackle back when the Big East still existed in football. And so for me, that was like, all right, I'm playing a first-team all-conference guy. I hadn't done a whole lot yet. And so I ended up going out and playing really well that day. For me, that was kind of my coming out party in an actual game. I had practiced really well. There were a lot of expectations within the coaching staff going into my sophomore year, and then I hurt my ankle pretty good. Okay. So going into my junior year was really kind of the anticipation. That's kind of where I broke out a little bit. But we're in the meeting room. I think it's the night before the game. So we're like going to go, we're watching film of Pittsburgh's offense. And then we get up to leave. We're going to go get snack, go to bed, for you got bed check. And I get up to leave and I'm walking out. And I think it was Callahan. I could be wrong. It was so long ago. But I think it was Callahan was like, hey, I'd like you to meet this recruit. And I didn't think anything of it. You see recruits all the time. Sometimes they come, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they come and they stay, sometimes they don't. So I met him, shook his hand, kind of moved on. I think something was said about he had played a lot of soccer growing up. And I think that's really the reason I kind of remember it. You don't hear that a lot. So Sue comes, you know, and I remember as a true freshman and redshirt freshman, you could see a couple of things. You could see he had very uncommon strength, inordinate amount of strength. You could see he was very talented. Again, didn't say a lot, but he was one of those guys that when you come in, especially in the trenches, upperclassmen, like if you're a D lineman or if you're an offensive lineman, upperclassmen on the opposite side of the ball that you're banging and clanging with every day. Like if you're an O lineman, upperclassman, D lineman, typically you're going to test you a little bit. And if you're a D lineman like Sue was or I was, the upperclassmen, O linemen are absolutely going to test you. They're not all sweethearts, ladies and gentlemen, but that's part of the gig. It was pretty quickly recognized that you didn't really mess with Sue. It wasn't a situation where it was like Richie, like if you mess with Richie, you're going to fight immediately and he's going to fight everybody anytime, anywhere, all day, every day. But it was a situation where like, you're not going to mess with him. You could just tell. And I remember thinking, I'm kind of glad he's on this side of the ball, you know, but he was redshirting or he was in a redshirt season. So he wasn't playing a ton. I was focused on, you know, playing down in and down out, doing the best that I could do. I do remember there were some Oklahoma drills, one-on-one, one defender, one offensive lineman, and you see who's going to knock the other one back. And I remember thinking there was some offensive linemen who had some rough days in that Oklahoma drill. Now, admittedly, when he was younger, he wasn't quite as motivated yet. There was times he got in trouble for not going as hard. In fact, if you remember his sophomore year, there was some games where it was right before Pelini came, I believe. I don't think he was entirely bought into Callahan and what they were doing. And there were some games where he started as a sophomore. You could see there was more being left on the table. He had more and it wasn't quite coming out yet. And it was really when Pelini came in and Pelini lit a fire. And Pelini, if you talk to like Halu and Kenny Bell and Sue, Pelini had a standard. he had a standard and he was demanding and you were going to meet it or you weren't going to be on the field. And I think that brought the best out of Sue. And then his junior season happened and you could see this dude has first round talent written all over him. He decided to come back his senior season and had one of the most dominant senior seasons you've ever seen in the history of college football, purely offense. It doesn't matter, offense, defense, quarterback, defensive line, what position you played. One of the most dominant senior seasons ever. And it's kind of one of those things where I talk about from the neck up, that talent was there from the beginning. I wonder if Bo Pelini doesn't become the head coach and he doesn't get that out of Sue. Maybe somebody else does. Obviously, it can happen. But if Bo doesn't come or if somebody doesn't get that out of Sue, he's obviously a great player and he was going to do great things. But would it have been to the level that he was at? And I do remember my senior year doing the Oklahoma drill. So there would be times when you could see on the chart who you were going to go against that day. And then usually at the end, a coach would hop in the middle and they just start making random matchups. And you had no idea if you were going to go in. And if you were going in, you had no idea who you were going to go against. And I remember there was a couple of times I'll keep names out of this. There was a couple of tight ends who weren't blocking the best. Coaches weren't thrilled with their blocking and they would pair them against me. I just remember Callahan saying, I want you to destroy blank. Like, in other words, teach him a lesson. And somebody asked me at the end of the year, I did well in these Oklahoma drills. Like, even big guys like Matt Slauson, you know, I did well against them. Big, good offensive linemen. They're like, is there anybody?
Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com. That's policygenius.com.
You would not want to go against in an Oklahoma drill. Well, no, there's nobody I wouldn't want to go against because I'll go against anybody. Even if you win, I'll go against you. You know, you better put your hand in the dirt and be ready to go again. Because even if you win 10 times, I'm putting the hand in the dirt the 11th time. Sometimes people just get tired of winning and then you start to beat them because they just aren't willing to keep going. And I was willing to keep going, whether I was winning or losing. They said, okay, if you could pick one guy you think would be the most difficult to go against, who would it be? Now, you got to keep in mind, I was about 3 years older than Sue, and I paused. And defensive guys don't go against defensive guys, just like offensive guys don't typically go against offensive guys. Maybe in your individual drills, but not in the big Oklahoma drill. And I paused, and I was like, Sue. And they looked at me, and they're like, Sue? He's like a freshman tackle. I was like, yeah, Sue. And I remember somebody else might feel differently. I felt like I was the strongest guy on the team my senior year, and I remember thinking, he's right there. Like, he's in my opinion, he was definitely number two, which was crazy considering how much younger he was than me. So it was kind of cool to see, you know, my rookie year was, I believe, his sophomore year. And you just kind of watched, you could see there was more to his game. And then Pelini comes in, and then you just saw the rocket ship take off. And then you watch him in the NFL. Not everybody transitions to the NFL the best. How's he going to do? He goes out and he gets 10 sacks his rookie year. I do remember this. And obviously, Sue had a great career. Nobody's questioned that. Barry Cofield signed with us. Okay. I think it was my second year in DC, would have been Sue's second year in the league. So about my sixth or seventh year in the league, his second or whatever it was. And Barry was watching film one time. I think we were going to play the Saints and the Lions had just played the Saints. And Sue had like two sacks in that game. Barry goes, that guy's getting more lucky sacks than I've ever seen. And I remember watching the film and it's kind of that D tackle jealousy. Like, you see someone else getting something and you want it. It's like, ah! I will say this. It's amazing how some people tend to just fall into things sometimes because good players just tend to be in the right place at the right time so often, and it's funny how that works out. You know what I mean? Any final thoughts before we move on to the next topic there?
No, it is. Again, you can talk about Sue for hours because it's just fascinating, the career that he had. You wonder, right, like you said about Pelini. Pelini had to re-recruit him back to the team in 2008. And then in 2009, because he probably could have went out and been a first-round pick, going into that draft. And he was just, again, he was just so dominant that, you know, you kind of remember thinking about other guys helping. Remember, Jared Crick had 5 sacks against Baylor. And I always stick up for Crick because people say, well, he wasn't the same player once Sue left. He had the same numbers his sophomore and junior years with and without Sue. So I'll throw that out there. But still, 5 sacks. I mean, that might have helped a little bit that Sue was also rushing in on there. So, I mean, it was just amazing. But that is, again, the one thing that, and what I'm interested in, I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he is a Hall of Famer. But those sack numbers might end up hurting him because those 10 that he got his rookie year were his high that he had throughout his career. And so you kind of look at some of the other people that have made it in or people that are trying to get in, his sack numbers are a little bit low, which would have been surprising to anybody, you know, especially after that rookie year in the career at Nebraska he had, where he was just devastating everybody anywhere. The other surprising stat, only one interception, which you don't expect too many interceptions for a defensive tackle, also that rookie year. So he had a really great rookie year.
He had a phenomenal rookie, NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year, and he did make the All-Decade. I mean, if you make the NFL All-Decade team, you're a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. You know, whether he's first ballot or not or whatever, I mean, he's clearly a Hall of Famer. Nobody's going to argue or debate that. All right. Is there anything off the text line before we move on to the next topic at all?
No, I don't see anything. Though I did, again, going back to that Heisman race, I did want to say, because you said it was a close race, obviously, but it was kind of interesting because, you know, in history, because I've heard it, and especially around here in Nebraska, we say, yeah, Ndamukong Suh should have won that, and people historically say that. Toby Gerhart probably should have won that. He was second to Mark Ingram in the total votes. So in first place votes, Mark Ingram had 227. Gerhart had 222. Suh, by the way, had 161. One spot behind Colt McCoy, who he clearly was better than, as we saw in that Big 12 championship game. But in total points there, so Mark Ingram had 1304 and Gerhart had 1276. This despite Ingram, of course, playing at Alabama. There's a little bit of a, you know, there's a lot of good players around there. Had 1658 yards and 1,658 yards and 17 touchdowns. Gerhart had 1,871 yards and 28 touchdowns. I think Gerhart has a pretty good argument for that Heisman, too.
I have no problem if Gerhart would have won it. I still think Suh should have won it. The most dominant defensive season I've seen someone have.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. I remember it being one of the closest races ever. And Ingram, hey, no problem. You know, Heisman Trophy winner, great NFL career as well. Won a national title at Bama. Hey, nothing but love. For me, I think if you take Ingram off of Bama, how big is the difference? Versus if you take Suh off of Nebraska, how big is the difference? And it's not an MVP. It's the most outstanding player. How is he not the most outstanding player? I mean, I'm just saying, like, he stood out a lot to me and every college football fan out there. That's pretty outstanding if you stand out that much. But I will go back to Jared Crick because he does get overshadowed. He had 20 career sacks here at Nebraska. And he missed the majority of his senior season because of an injury. Imagine had he played his senior season. Yes, he played next to Suh, but to your point, he had a great junior season after Suh was gone. I like to give him crap, though. So he was doing media for a while. He had me on his show. I've had him on our show a couple of times. Now he's coaching high school football, so best of luck to him next season. He's going to do a phenomenal job. Maybe I should have him at the camp next year.
There you go.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. Guys keep popping in my head, but I digress. I like to give him a hard time, though, because he had 20 career sacks at Nebraska. I had 20 and a half. And I just like to poke him with that.
Nice.
I completely ignore the fact that he missed all those games his senior year because of the injury, you know? But I'm just like, because he would have passed me. He would have. But in fairness to me, I missed games my sophomore year. So maybe I would have had more. But, you know, it is what it is. But I just like to give him that little poke. Hey, you had 20 career sacks. That's awesome. It's almost as good as me, you know? But he laughs, and he laughs it off, and we have a good time. He's a good dude.
That's interesting, too, because Barry Turner is also a top 10, number 10, but 10th in career sacks. So they had three on that defensive line. That's, I guess I didn't realize that.
Dude, that 09 defense. Are you freaking kidding me? Are you kidding me? 1 second. One freaking second. All right. Let me see here. You want to talk about Matt Rhule's year 3 jump, or do you want to talk about, yet again, people think we have the easiest schedule in the Big Ten. What do you want to talk about next?
Let's go with the easiest schedule. I'm interested in how people perceive that.
Phil Steele ranks Nebraska's schedule in the Big Ten Conference. Nebraska Cornhuskers have the easiest schedule in the Big Ten Conference, according to the college football analyst Phil Steele. Okay, and I can go through and I can read all of this and read it out loud, but here's essentially what it is. No Oregon, no Ohio State. There is Penn State. Okay, there is Michigan. This is, we don't expect this to be a typical Michigan team. So when you talk about the three big dogs, and Michigan's a big dog, they're not one of the favorites to win a national title. I mean, they're in the conversation. They're top 20. But if you narrow it down to top 10 or less, the three big dogs are Penn State, Oregon, Ohio State coming into the season. We'll see what happens. You know, Michigan, they surprised me when they beat Bama and Ohio State last year. We only play one of them. When you look at the schedule, there's only one game you look at and you're like, we're going to be a big underdog. There isn't another game where you're like, we're a big underdog. Here's the other thing. We don't have a true road game until mid-October. Cincinnati gave up a home game to essentially give us a home game because that's what Arrowhead's going to become when they play the Tomahawk Chop. And you got Akron at home. You got Houston Christian at home. You got Michigan at home. You got Michigan State at home. It's not until October 11th we actually go on the road. And even our road games are Maryland, Minnesota, UCLA. Is it really? I thought there was four road games.
Well, Penn State.
There it is. I knew I was missing another one. So it's like you look at Michigan. Oh, man, it's going to be tough to play in. Oh, wait, that's in Lincoln. You look at USC. Oh, we got to go out of the way. Nope, that's in Lincoln. We got to go to Penn State. Oh, man, Iowa. Oh, wait, that's in Lincoln. Even the tough games that we have, and I'm not taking any game for granted. Let's be clear. Minnesota, Michigan State. Oh, I'm not taking any game for granted. Cincinnati. I'm going to have to find the stat. There's a stat. We haven't beaten a power four team to start off a season in X amount of years. I got to go back and search up that stat. Because we've not had a lot of game one success. We've not had a lot of game one success versus power four teams. So I ain't taking that game for granted. But you look at some of the bigger name brand teams, the most difficult games you would project on this schedule, outside of Penn State, they're all in Lincoln. And then you don't see a lot of the bigger, tough brand names. For me, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of, oh, this is an easy schedule. Because that happened last year. And check this. This is a win. Check, win, check, win, check, win. We saw how that went. And just every time I turn around, everyone's like, they've got the easiest schedule in the Big Ten. Like, this is like the third different publication. And Phil, I mean, Steele's been around a long time. This is the third different publication I've seen talk about it. And I'm like, man, let me look at the schedule again. Like, why? Why do people consistently think we have the easiest schedule? And I think the one thing that you and I have not talked about a ton is because the bigger brand name, more difficult games outside of Penn State, USC, Michigan, even Cincinnati was supposed to be a road game. Now it's going to be a home game. That difficult first game of the year where you never know what you're going to get. It's basically now a home game in Arrowhead. There's going to be way more Nebraska fans there. So thank you for Cincinnati for giving that to us. And they're going to say thank you when we give them the bigger check because that's why they made the switch. Those games are in Lincoln. And we hadn't really talked about that much. Do we got to go to break real quick that we can follow up on that when we come back?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to break. Don't go anywhere. And I want to hear your thoughts. How much credit, let us know on the text line, or how much emphasis do you put on, oh, this is an easy schedule. This is the easiest schedule in the Big Ten. Do you still buy into that much after kind of what happened last offseason going into the season? Is that something you still pay attention to very much or not? And I have pointed this out. Even USC coming into Lincoln, they will have played three straight preseason teams that we project to be in the top 15 before they come to Lincoln. And then some of the timing of the bye weeks time out very well for Nebraska as well. That Penn State game, we have a bye week before that Penn State game. I don't think Michigan State's going to be uber easy, especially right off the Michigan game, which is going to be such an emotional game. Whether we win or lose, lots of emotions. Michigan State, I think, is going to be better than people think. We have a bye week before then, before we hit that 4-5 game stretch late October, early November. But then we get a bye week right before that Penn State game. And we had Ohio State on the ropes last year. So let me know, how much credence do you put into these preseason strength of schedule rankings? Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.